Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. That's what high school students across North Carolina and the nation are saying and doing at record rates. Participation in high school sports in North Carolina grew 5% during the 2023-24 school year, equal to about 10,000 students. That one-year gain pushed participation to nearly 209,000 students. Nationally, the number of high school students playing sports surpassed 8 million for the first time, with record numbers for both boys and girls. For anyone who has taken note of the college basketball and now WNBA rivalry of Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, or the hugely popular U.S. women's national soccer team, or gymnast Simone Biles, you get the idea. The fact that young women are playing sports at surging levels probably comes as less of a surprise. Record participation among all students after pandemic-caused declines has boosted optimism for the future of high school sports. Despite that optimism, challenges remain. Two of the biggest go hand in hand, sportsmanship and safety. Referees and officials consistently call for better behavior among players, coaches, and parents. Bad behavior is the number one cause of officials quitting. And fan outbursts at games, including fights, have become a persistent problem. Here to discuss the state of high school sports with me today are three people in the trenches. Marilyn Q. Tucker is the commissioner of the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. Erica Turner is Executive Director of Athletics at Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. And Josh Springer is Head Varsity Girls Basketball Coach at Providence Day School. Good morning, and thank you all for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
I'd like to begin by asking each of you to share with the audience your experiences playing sports. I know we spoke just before coming on air. All three of you are former basketball players. So whoever would like to begin, let's hear how sports affected your lives.
Well, I'll go ahead and start just to kick us off. I started playing basketball. Actually, my first attempt at organized sports was as a ninth grader. Prior to that, anything I did was out in the yard with the kids in the neighborhood. And so when I started playing basketball, it was at a time when there were a limited number of sports for females. And at that time, basketball was the only sport being offered in my high school. And so that's what I did for 4 years. I had the opportunity to play in college. But again, this was during a time when women's basketball was still a six-woman game in high school. My first year in college was the first year we went where all five players could go all over the court. We were using the same size basketball as the men. But what I enjoyed about basketball and just sports in general was just the teamwork, the camaraderie that was developed, all of the lessons that we continue to learn through sports. They impacted me in such a way that, I got my degree in health and physical education, wanted to teach, and ultimately had the opportunity to coach. And so that's really how I got my start and what an impact it made then and has continued to make as I've gone on this career journey.
That's the voice of Q Tucker. She, of course, is the commissioner of the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. Erica Turner,
so
what was your experience?
My experience with sports really started at a younger age, and I didn't start out with basketball, believe it or not. It started out with cheerleading. So in the Optimus Park, where I'm from, in Catawba County, I started out as a cheerleader, and actually softball was a big part of my life up until, and then when I started basketball, I really wasn't that good. And so I actually got cut from the basketball team in my seventh grade year in middle school. So I did make it my eighth grade year, and then I kind of blossomed from there. I'm a late bloomer, so to speak, in basketball, but softball was really my favorite sport at the time. And so I did end up playing basketball. I ran track as well, but I went to college to play basketball. So that was the one that was paying for my education. So I learned to love it. It was a free education. So I started out my career at UNC Chapel Hill. And then I transferred to North Carolina A&T State University and finished up my career in basketball. And so for me, I'm still in relationships with my teammates. And so that's important. So I lost a son at 5 months old, and it was my college teammates that was there for me and still are there for me from North Carolina A&T State University. We're in a group text together, even with our coach. He has been a great role model for us. He's just been inducted in his Hall of Fame in Missouri, where he's from, and we're all in group text congratulating him, and he keeps up with us. And so those relationships are priceless, and that we're still there for each other. And so sports has been that for me. When I didn't have anything else, I still have my teammates. I know that I can pick up that phone and call them at any time, and they're going to be there. We don't talk every day. We don't see each other day. We're all over the United States. But I can call any one of my teammates. And I believe even in Chapel Hill, I can call some of my teammates in Chapel Hill, and they're going to be there for me at any time. And so sports has been that for me. In the toughest time of my life, I could rely on my team.
And Josh Springer, you assured us that you were the leading scorer every year when you were playing high school basketball, right?
I can assure you I am the least talented player of the three of us on the call. Appreciate you having me, Eric. Grew up in Wisconsin, and my early years, I played t-ball and was really fortunate to have my dad as a coach. And those are some of my best memories playing sports. Both my parents were really involved in my life, but dad really made it a point to coach a lot of my youth sport teams from t-ball. The Springs Kings, as my last name is Springer, and those jerseys live on 40 years later. And then in middle school, was fortunate to play for him again through a youth basketball team. And again, I was a very average player, but I loved it. I had a huge passion for any sports, football, basketball, baseball, soccer, tennis, you name it. Again, I was a very average high school player. I think I scored 32 points in my basketball career. And with that being said, I had a JV basketball coach who said something that really pointed me on an incredible trajectory. I was sitting on the bench as probably the 12th man on the team one day, and he turned to me in the game and he said, "Josh, I guarantee you're going to be a better coach than you ever were a player." And I say that story because the impact of one person's words, especially a coach or a teacher, and again, I was so blessed to have a dad and mom who poured into me all the time. But that coach, Coach Jerry Schutte, said to me, "Josh, go coach," basically. And at 15 or 16 years old, most young men, I think, would take that as an insult. I took it as a real compliment. And when I was 18 years old, I graduated high school. My dad got a junior college job with a women's basketball team. And we had no basketballs, no players, no uniforms. Other than that, we had a great program. And it was the best thing ever to happen to me. I was fortunate to coach with my dad. And my coaching career started at age 18. And I was coaching young ladies who were 18, 20, 22. We had a young lady from Sri Lanka that was 26 years old. And I remember sitting there saying, "I'm 18 years old coaching young ladies in their early 20s at a junior college in Wisconsin." And then was fortunate to coach at a couple other small colleges. Similar to Q, I got a degree in physical education and health education because I had a passion for that, and then pursued a master's degree in coaching education at Ohio University, and coached 7 years on the collegiate level at Division I, Division II, Division III, and junior college. You can do the math. I wasn't at any place very long. A couple of them were my choice. A couple of them were not our choice when we didn't win enough games. And we understand that about the industry. And then I've been fortunate to be at Providence State for the last 18 years as the head varsity girls basketball coach.
I was going to say, let's not let humility get in the way of any of our guests here. Josh Springer has won more than 400 games during his career at Providence Day, including 10 championships. Erica mentioned that she played college basketball. She's also the first Black female to lead CMS athletics. And Q is the first female commissioner of the North Carolina High School Athletic Association and was recently inducted into the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame. So I am way overmatched, but I'm going to do my best. So Q, I'm going to start with you. I mentioned earlier, girls sports are growing across the board. HighSchoolOT.com recently reported that girls' participation broke 90,000 for the first time last school year. 91,111 girls played sports in North Carolina out of 209,000, roughly. That's nearly half. What's driving that growth?
Well, I think, and maybe you mentioned it in your opening comments, we are post-pandemic, and I think people started feeling much more comfortable with returning to play with all that is entailed in playing, being in locker rooms, being in those close spaces. So as parents felt more comfortable with their students, their children returning to play, I think it just drive that idea that they wanted those relationships. Mental health took a hit during COVID. And so many of our young people spoke about how being alone and away from their classmates and teammates, it was difficult for them. So once we started to open up, return to the playing arena, I think all students, and in particular young women, they felt that need to be a part of a team, part of a program, part of something where they could develop relationships with other teammates, develop a relationship with an adult mentor role model. And then, of course, I think the other thing that has driven it is the fact that we've expanded the opportunities for female in the sport of wrestling in North Carolina. So those numbers started to be separated out from the men's wrestling numbers. So you see now the women's numbers standing on their own. And I just think it's just been a combination of the desire to belong, to be a part of something, the feeling of I'm free now to go back and do some of those things. And again, some of our schools have now added flag football, even though we don't sanction a state championship in it. Some of our young women are participating in flag football, and those numbers are not even reflected in the numbers that we give to the National Federation. So if we were given those, we would have seen even more. So, you know, those are the things that I would highlight as if from my seat as what I see as contributing to this rise.
Erica, how does that track with what you're seeing at CMS?
I agree with everything that Q said, but I also think the adults are being intentional about creating these opportunities for our students, because we talked about social and emotional learning coming out of COVID. And so it's important that we're intentional about creating these specific opportunities. And so girls flag football, just for example, we had at one school 116 girls to come out for flag football. And so with girls flag football, we were able to reach those kids who didn't play the traditional sports, right? Those kids that got cut from those sports. And just to give them a space to be in, to be around teammates, to be around coaches that care, to be around mentors. And so I just think the adults have been very intentional about creating those opportunities for our students, athletes, to kind of grow and be a part of something.
Josh, we're coming up against the break, but I want to give you at least the chance to start an answer, which is, as I mentioned, you win a lot at Providence Day. Girls basketball had kind of gone down for a number of years, but it's bounced back the past couple of years. What do you see?
I love what Erica just said about trying to be really intentional with opportunities. And here we have a Lil Dribblers program. We're fortunate we're a K-12 school. And so there's challenges and exciting things about having a school with 14 grades on campus. And so we have a Lil Dribblers program with 50 girls starting at kindergarten, first grade, and second grade with getting a basketball in their hand and a Providence State Girls Basketball State Championship t-shirt and 175 girls playing. And a lot of it is that opportunity. And so I think that's been a big piece of the puzzle in helping young ladies get excited about basketball at a young age.
We'll pick that right back up. Stay with us on Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins. Today's topic is the growth of high school sports and some of the challenges faced by schools, coaches, administrators, and students. My guests are Q Tucker, who is commissioner of the State High School Athletic Association, Erica Turner is executive director of athletics at CMS, and Josh Springer is head varsity girls basketball coach at Providence Day School. And Josh, when we were going to the break, you were saying that the Little Dribblers program is quite fruitful.
Well, and I just think it's important to have opportunities. We see opportunities on every street corner in Charlotte for boys basketball. And traditionally, I don't know that there's been as many for girls basketball, specifically speaking at those younger ages in elementary school and middle school. And I think those opportunities are growing in leaps and bounds over the last decade. And that's one thing we've tried to be really intentional about here at PD for a long time. And then a couple other things I'd like to say just for the growth. I think there's more and more families in general moving to North Carolina over the last few years. And so hopefully that obviously helps the athletic participation numbers. And then to piggyback what Q said about mental health, I taught health here, ninth grade health here for 16 years. And obviously physical health is extremely important. None of us would deny that. But especially over the last few years in teaching ninth grade health, the conversations with hundreds of kids, athletes, non-athletes, about the importance of sport and just that healthy outlet. And that's not new news to anyone, but I think it's really been underscored about, I miss seeing my friend Kelly or Rachel or Desiree or whoever it is out at practice, whether we win or lose, whether I'm the best player or the least talented player, that social connection, that physical outlet, that mental, emotional, social, spiritual outlet, those are powerful. And whether it's basketball, soccer, tennis, bowling, whatever it might be, I always say physical health is extremely important, but I hope we're putting every other aspect as health on an equal pedestal.
And I'm curious, Q, when we talk about girls, women's sports, we're talking about a lot of the growth. Josh just talked about some of the things that they're doing. How much disparity do you still see when it comes to access and opportunity for girls versus boys?
Well, certainly it is better than it used to be, but there still are those, as he mentioned, and just a glaring example, when you ride around various communities, you see the guys out playing the sports, playing basketball. Now, I don't think there's any sign anywhere that says the girls couldn't go out on those same, courts and play basketball, but I don't think that females have felt the same freedom to take advantage of those opportunities, because when you ride by some of those, it's always full of the males. And so for them, they wouldn't invade that space. I think many of our schools, well, I won't say many, there are still a number of our schools that are limited in terms of what they're able to do as it relates to providing the opportunity for a sport. Just simply one, maybe they don't have the same number of interested females. So there isn't the same, maybe it's initiative, maybe it's drive by the administrators to try to say, we're really going to push this. And maybe trying to be creative in opportunities, as Erica was talking about, being intentional. So if we want to provide some resources for our females, well, let's start small. What about an intramural program? And let's just try to get it going. Let's generate the interest. And then if we get them started, then perhaps that will spread into our interscholastic program. So I think there is still some disparity. I think we've come a long way, but I think we still have a ways to go.
And Q, I want to stick with you for a moment. I mentioned sportsmanship. You've spoken out about the problem of keeping referees and officials when sportsmanship keeps getting worse. There was a statewide survey in 2022 in which 66% of officials said they think sportsmanship is worse than ever before. What can be done to fix this? What are you trying to do to fix this?
Well, I think it's a collective effort. Obviously, our staff here in Chapel Hill, we can't fix it. If either one of us knew what the main ingredient was to fixing it, we probably wouldn't be talking to you today. We'd be somewhere selling it and, this kind of thing. But it's a collective effort. So what we've tried to do as a state association staff and as a working with our board of directors is to try to find those initiatives. We've piggybacked on Bench Bad Behavior. That was an initiative driven by the NFHS. We've tried to get our schools to be creative in ways that they can help parents understand. So much of it is driven by what the parents are saying and doing in the stands. And I think that just feeds the student athletes. They hear it. They want to then just echo what they're hearing. And then we have to have great role models on the sideline, that coaches are very clear with their expectations, define good sportsmanship. Here's what it looks like. Here's what I will accept and what I will not accept. And then we move forward with those things. So we've tried to approach it from an expanded manner. Parents, here's what we need from you. Share those expectations, coaches, administrators, and then have the young people to help with that. We have a student athlete advisory committee. And one of the things that we've asked them is, what are some things that you can do as students? And I think that that's another avenue that really is probably untapped. Get the young people to drive that message. They have a lot more control over mamas and daddies than we do. And so have them making those announcements about this is unacceptable. Whatever it takes, we have to work together.
That's the voice of Q Tucker. She is commissioner of the State High School Athletic Association. Also with us today is Erica Turner. She is executive director of athletics at CMS, and Josh Springer is head varsity girls basketball coach at Providence Day School. Erica, I'm curious what your experience is like on this same topic with sportsmanship, and what are some of the things that you're trying to do to improve?
So just like Q, we want to use the voices of our students. So we do have a district-wide student athlete advisory council too that discusses those things in those meetings, and they take some information back to their schools and talk to their peers. But as well, in our athletic directors meetings on a monthly basis, just yesterday, we talk about having pregame security meetings during the week. So don't wait till Friday. Have that meeting on Tuesday. Let's talk about what we're going to do if A, B, and C happens. Now, I can't guard against everything, but I can be prepared if something happens. Mm-hmm. And so here we're prepared to, listen, we can empty the stadium and finish the game with our fans to get people's attention. We've done that on several occasions. And it's not if it's going to happen, it's when it's going to happen. It's not, and everybody has different issues at different schools. And so it's important that we have this conversation, we have these meetings, bring the parents on board. We also have a parent athletic advisory council too that we're trying to work through them so they can get the message out to the parents at the different schools. And we work through our coaches symposium that we have at the end of the year to try to stress the importance of, like you said earlier, about having those good role models on those sidelines. But the biggest thing is we can put everything in place that we want to put in place, but we got to be accountable to it. If I say I'm going to do this, then I need to be accountable. If I say I'm going to put you out of the stadium because you're not acting up to our standards, and I need to make sure that I follow through on that. I remember being a principal in the first game of the season. I told the parents in the parent meeting, listen, once I put you out, you're not coming back for 365 days. In the very first game, I had to make an example out of a parent. I asked him to sit down twice. He said, no, you got to go. And so everybody saw him walk out of the game, and that set a tone for the rest of the season, because they know that, okay, Ms. Turner's not playing, she's going to put you out. So we put all these things in place, but we're not consistent a lot of times with the accountability piece and holding ourselves accountable to do what we say we're going to do. So we have to be consistent and holding people accountable to do their part. Parents, all stakeholders that come to a game, don't drop your kids off without an adult supervision, especially the elementary school kids and the middle school kids. So we put a safety guidelines in place for our athletic directors and for our principals to use. And so far, you know, it works some days, and some days, you know, we have issues. We do have 21 high schools, but I will say the majority of our high schools follow those guidelines, and we haven't had many issues so far this year.
Josh, I'm curious, as a coach, how much do you think about your reactions to referees influencing your players, parents, and other students who are in the gym?
A lot. And I will tell you, there's been days I've gotten it right, and sadly, there's been days I've gotten it wrong. And anybody that knows me knows God has blessed me with a lot of energy, passion, fire, whatever you want to say. And there's been days that has been my greatest personality trait and my worst personality trait, quite frankly, if I'm being totally honest. And so I think it's really important that coaches coach, parents parent, referees referee. And I think a lot of times those lines get blurred. And I love what Erica just said, that the old adage is, whatever you tolerate, you encourage. And let me say that again, whatever you tolerate, you encourage. And that's in parenting, that's in teaching, that's in coaching, that's in administration, whatever it might be. And so I think from the referee point of view specifically, a couple things. One of my assistant coaches has been with me 18 years. He's a college referee and a high school referee. And so we share stories like this all the time. And again, as you mentioned, Eric, the referee numbers are going down dramatically, mm-hmm. and especially in that 20 to 30 year old age group. And the reality, as we know, is if we don't have referees, we don't have sports. And I can tell you on a personal level, I have a 16-year-old son and an 11-year-old son, and my 16-year-old son referees basketball and soccer, and he loves it. However, he did a game a few months ago. He was in a gym, and he loves everything about basketball. Unfortunately, a parent came up to him, and again, he's a 16-year-old kid, and a grown adult in his 50s came up and was cursing him out nose to nose for a minute straight. And somebody else filmed it, and I saw the video. And so obviously I have concern to the coach and a teacher, but my dad had his number one right there. And when I see something that my own son loves doing and think he's pretty good at, could have a future, a career doing this. And when you see something like that happen at a youth sporting event, it's really difficult. It really is. And then we wonder why, sadly, a lot of referees are not interested in participating. I know last year at the high school level, the referee compensation went up for basketball referees. And so that obviously helped some numbers go up. And I just hope at the end of the day, again, we can remember this is a game. And sadly, I think sometimes the pressure mounts. The pressure mounts from the parents. The kids feel the pressure of, I have to perform well. We have to win for XYZ scholarship or whatever it might be. And sadly, I see that pressure rolling downhill often in families.
Hugh, the statistics from your organization show that the number of ejections more than doubled over the last 4 years to 918 from 438. That's doubling's a lot more than a 5% gain in participation. So clearly there's a disparity here. Any ideas or theories as to what is driving that many outbursts, that change? That's a huge difference.
Well, it is. And again, I think we have to kind of keep things in perspective. We came out of COVID when social skills, were not maybe being as emphasized as we used to because we had that one-on-one contact. So young people were not playing for a while. Then when they came back, it was in limited spaces or spaces where there were limited spectators. And so I think some of it, I have a phrase that I use. I call them OBIES, OBIES, out of body experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think that oftentimes students have those out of body experiences because they feel the pressure to perform well in front of not only their teammates, but their parents. And so as a result of that, they act out and they do something that sometimes they immediately regret. But I also think that there is this idea in this time in which we find ourselves is that there is seemingly a belief that the way we settle issues, it's not the same way that we settled them years ago. Is, you know, obviously our kids are not pulling out guns on the field and doing those things. But sometimes it's that they feel like they have to swing, they have to fight, they have to use a profane word. They have to be disrespectful to an official who they believe made a bad call. And so those things have been allowed, and coaches don't always check students because students don't do things in a game that they typically have not done in practice. And so if coaches permit it, it's like they're promoting it. And so I think that's one of the ways in which we see maybe the increase. But I also have to say that one of the things that also has occurred is some of the restraints or constraints that have been put on this organization you know, to not be able to penalize in ways in which we used to penalize. It used to be if you were ejected from a contest, you sat two games. Well, under our new authority, we can only sit them one game from the state office. But now school systems could do more. So I think that has had a has been a contributing factor to some of the increase. But I think some of what we're seeing just mirrors society in the way people behave.
Eric, I'm curious, as a former player, and you played at the college level, do you see a difference in the way athletes interact with, or parents or coaches interact with referees now as opposed to when you were playing?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why I transitioned out of coaching and went into administration, because it became difficult to really coach authentically because you're dealing with the parent issues and it wasn't fun anymore. And so I had kids on my team. I'm only playing because my dad wanted me and didn't really want to be out there, and parents was forcing them to play. They happened to be pretty good at it, but it did cause a strain on that relationship because the child didn't really want to play. And so I didn't really want to put her in a game if she was traumatized and didn't really want to play. But then I had to address dad at the end of the game. And I got tired of addressing dad, trying not to embarrass the child all at the same time. And so it has changed a lot. And that was the reason why I kind of transitioned out into administration. But I want to say something about what Q said, what we do here in CMS. If anybody is ejected, whatever the state gives them, we double it in CMS. Oh, wow. And now the adults, the coaches, if they get ejected or if they have an issue, not only are we going to double that, but you're going to have a conversation with me and one of the associate superintendents and possibly the superintendent. So
we're going to have more conversation coming up on high school sports right here on Charlotte.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaOfSouthCharlotte.com.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins. We are discussing high school sports today and some of the challenges faced by schools, coaches, administrators, and students. With me today is Q Tucker. She is commissioner of the State High School Athletic Association. Erica Turner is executive director of athletics at CMS, and Josh Springer is head varsity girls basketball coach at Providence Day School. Josh, you mentioned earlier that how did you phrase it? You said that tolerance is acceptance in essence. I think I bungled your phrase, but that's kind of what you were saying. I'm curious, is there anything else that you see that's necessary from a rule standpoint, a discipline standpoint that would help?
Well, I want to take a little bit of a different approach. And again, all of our schools have unique situations. And as a teacher and a parent at this school and a coach and an FCA advisor, one of the things I think is important is to try to build a relationship with the parents throughout the year. And what I mean by that is when we play a game on Friday night and I pull your daughter out or I bench her or I fuss at her, whatever it may be, I critique her, constructively criticize, whatever it may be. If that's the only view or lens you have of me as a parent or a fan, that may make you think a certain way. But if I've spoken to you countless times throughout the year about how your daughter's doing in class, about the challenges she had Friday night, about the college recruitment process, about English class, about tutoring, whatever it might be, again, we all know relationships are all about, life is all about relationships. And I think that's one thing that we try to work really hard on at this school with our coaches and our teachers in general is building those positive relationships with parents, with families, because adversity will hit everywhere. It always does. And when it does, then we hopefully have a foundation of trust of that's a great person. I may agree or disagree that he went zone or he went man or he played five guards or Kelly took the game-winning shot, but I know he cares about my kid at the end of the day. I know that coaching staff, I know that school, win, lose, or draw, cares about, love, supports my kid 365 days a year. And I think that's really important.
Erica, I think you alluded a little bit to a circumstance that occurred here in Charlotte in September, and there was a fight in the stands at a local high school football game. It was delayed 15 minutes, and then I believe the game finished in an empty stadium. To your point, if you have to empty a stadium, you'll empty a stadium. Tell me some of the challenges with crowd behavior and what you're doing to try and stem some of that bad behavior.
Well, we try to tell our athletic directors, like when the students come to the game, make them sit in the stands. You got a lot of kids rumbling around during the game, and that caused potential issues too. If they're not coming to see the game, if they refuse to sit down, you need to put them out. And making sure that the young kids come with an adult and supervised by an adult. They're not just dropping the kids off. And don't oversell the tickets, right? And so make sure, like, the number of police officers that you have, make sure that they feel like that they can secure that game. If you don't have enough officers to secure that game, you got to stop the ticket sale. It ain't about making money. It's about keeping people safe. Innocent people get hurt. And so that particular night, it was, and unfortunately, I don't even think it was CMS students. It was other students coming to the game because it was a high profile game and they happened to be from another county, but then I won't mention. But unfortunately, that school gets the black eye for that, right? But I found out through communication that everything was good on the field, good sportsmanship going on the field. Referee actually sent me an email, talked about how both teams responded well to the incident. So if the kids are fine on the field, empty that stadium and let these babies finish the game. And so that was my thought process. And you're not getting your money back. And so hopefully people will get the message to hold people accountable. But a lot of that would be sit in the stands and watch the game. You know, I know you're going to go to the concession stand, but we got to hold them accountable, make them go back to their seats and watch the game. And so it's just a lot of factors that goes into play that we need to consider. But one of the things I ask my ADs, are you leading or are you managing? You got to lead, you know, and sometimes you got to make those tough decisions when it comes to incidents like that. But happy to say that, you know, not too many, no bad injuries were reported from that. And they were able to finish the game in a positive manner.
Josh, as a coach, what sense do you have of crowd behavior as you're trying to coach your team?
Great question. I just think, well, it's funny. Some of my friends and family, they'll say, Josh, you didn't even know I was at the game. You were so tunnel visioned. And I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse. I do think as the coach during the game, on a broader scale, if I go off kilter, that indirectly sends a message to people around me wearing Providence Day or other uniforms that, hey, this is okay and this is acceptable behavior. Mm-hmm. And so I do not take that responsibility lightly at all. I think in general, it goes back to at the start of the season, having that parent meeting and outlining those expectations. And again, I love what Erica said about being consistent and what you say matters and not what you say. Do your actions back that up in a positive way? And if there is an incident, we hope there's not, but if there is an incident, if we just say things over and over and over, people won't believe that. They will only follow your actions. And so do we have great actions when there's awesome fan behavior, and when there's not positive fan behavior, are we addressing that in the appropriate way? And then obviously, hopefully everybody else falls in line. And again, I just go back a few years to when 99% of parents want to see their kids play. They want to see their kids play. And we know a few years ago, we didn't even have that option due to the pandemic. And so it wasn't that long ago, if we can remind ourselves as parents, hey, you only get a small window to watch Johnny play football, Kevin play soccer, Melissa play basketball, whatever it is. Please soak up these opportunities and don't take advantage of them and don't ruin them because of your behavior.
Well said. Q, I want to ask you, switching gears a little bit, you oversee, as you well know, you oversee an entire state. And the western part of North Carolina is hurting and suffering greatly. Part of that is schools and part of that is sports. What is the picture for sports and recovering sports in western North Carolina right now?
Well, I'm happy to say that based on some feedback I received yesterday, most of western North Carolina is allowing athletics to resume. Even Buncombe County yesterday allowed tennis for the young women in that area. Now, there are still many schools, and the athletic director for Buncombe County indicated this, the school where they were playing their conference tournament for women's tennis, It was the only high school that had water and, you know, had utilities. So that's why they were at that school. But there are still many schools. There are no access points, no water, no, you know, utilities. And so we are excited, though, that at least there is the effort to begin. So many of them recognize the importance of athletics, the community, the ability to bring people together. It's about hope. And when you can see athletics start up, it gives you hope that we are going to make it and we're going to get back. It's going to take a while, but at least we've started. And so I was just delighted to hear that. We've had to, when I say we, our board of directors last week made some adjustments to the schedule in an effort to help the folks in Western North Carolina. But it also, we didn't just say, well, only the people affected by Helene will be able to do this, this, and that. It was spread across the state. So we extended the season in football. We extended dual team tennis for the females. We made an adjustment in the qualifying numbers for golf, for example. So I think our board was great in what they tried to do to ensure safety, but also allow our young people to be able to get back. So Western North Carolina is coming back athletically, slowly but surely.
And Erica, you know, it's interesting. The two answers that Josh and Q just gave on different topics are related in a way, because I think some of us, sometimes we miss the great things about sports, and particularly high school sports. Josh was talking about, and I'm almost tearing up thinking about how fast my daughters went through high school playing, and then it's over. It's so fast. And Q was just talking about how sports of all kinds represent recovery. You think of any tragedy in this country, the ballpark or the stadium or the arena is a place where people go to heal. So in your job, give me some of the examples that stand out to you of remembering why we're doing this.
Right. And so I'm going to go back to my student athlete advisory council. Soon after the hurricane, they came in my conference room and had a meeting and immediately started talking about how they could help the student athletes, or, you know, do what can they do for Western North Carolina. So they went back to their respective schools and collected donations and brought it to the Hood Heart at Breakfast on last Friday for them to load on the truck. With Purple Heart Homes was taking the donations up. And so we had about 20 student athletes representing all of our high schools in Charlotte bringing donations for the Western Carolina. And they've already pitched an idea for December that they're going to have a competition where they're going to stuff the bus. We have three different conferences here in Charlotte, and they're going to do a competition to see who can stuff the bus, stuff the most in the bus for toys for the kids for Christmas, to make sure that they have a Christmas in December for the kids in Western Carolina. So, you know, the kids, if you stay around the students long enough, they'll keep you grounded. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so grateful for that student athlete advisory council, because they keep me grounded. I remember my why every day, and I can drown out the noise when people are upset about a decision that I made, or they tag me on Twitter because they want to make me upset. So I go back to my student athletes, and they keep you grounded, and you know why you're doing what you're doing, and it keeps you motivated. So I'm grateful for our student athletes here in Charlotte.
And Josh, Erica mentioned something that's also interesting on maybe not always the positive side, some positive, which is social media. It's so different in every realm of life. That includes high school sports. How do you deal with that with your players?
How much time do we have? I'm just kidding. You know what? I really try to choose it as a glass half full. And this is an opportunity to highlight Providence Day, to highlight Providence Day girls basketball. In short, we say, if it's not okay for a five-year-old, if it's not okay for your parents, if it's not okay for your grandparents or for me to read, don't put it out there. Mm-hmm. Because if it's something positive about you hitting the game-winning shot, it's going to be there for 50 years. If it's something negative about you typing, texting, taking a picture, video, and calling them a knucklehead, that's the only word I can say on the radio right now, that's going to stay with you, sadly, but true, for the next 5, 10, 20, 50 years as well, as you're trying to go to college, as you're trying to get a job. And so, again, we try to say, put something out there positive, that's okay for every single person, 5-year-olds and 95-year-olds and everybody in between, and highlight somebody else. Our program motto is, it's not about me. And I know that's so difficult in this day and age where people want to think it's all about them, but we try to be the antithesis of that and try to highlight somebody else. And when we lose, if we lose, if we make a mistake, coach makes a mistake, your teammate makes a mistake, stay away from the keyboard. Don't be a keyboard warrior. Stay away from that video record and take 24 hours to cool off. And that's for everybody. That's coaches, that's players, that's parents, that's fans. And sadly but true, I know we make a lot of knee-jerk reactions after the moment and emotions get sensationalized, but that would be my short nugget on the topic of social media.
And as we have a few minutes left here, Q, I want to ask you about one of the problems that comes with growth, and anybody in North Carolina deals with growth in so many ways, traffic, housing, all those things. In sports, you need places for people to play. With all of this growth, how much pressure is there out there for facilities?
Well, it's tremendous because, again, everybody, it's a business. And so there's a price tag with every place. We're trying to find those special places. It comes with a price tag. And so you have to factor that in. But as we're looking at our universities, as we're looking at our smaller colleges, you know, we want them to invite us to open their facilities to us. And we've been really, really fortunate here in North Carolina that those facilities at NC State, at UNC Chapel Hill, in at Wake Forest, at Duke University, and then you move on up into the Hickory area, they've been really, really great. And then you come to, you know, our municipal facilities. Look at what the Panthers have done the last couple of years in hosting our press conference for our football players. And they really would love for us to hold state championships there. And that may be on the horizon with the expanded classifications. But
I was going to ask you that. So that is a possibility. Go ahead.
That's down the road, but okay. It could be a possibility. So finding those facilities, because everybody is wanting to use them. We have a great soccer facility in Wake County, but they host ACC. Then they host NCAAs. We found a great soccer facility in Matthews. Well, we looked at maybe we needed to delay our state championships in soccer. Well, they couldn't help us because the next weekend, if we delayed it, they're hosting an NCAA. So facilities are, you know, in hot demand. Mm-hmm. And so we just have to do everything we can to try to find those people who want to work with us, partner with us, and believe in education-based athletics, so much so that some of them will shuffle things in order for us to be able to use those facilities.
And Eric, I'm going to give you the last word, just a few seconds left, but you're nodding your head. I think that you understand this problem. You deal with it every day.
Yeah, because I'm trying to get state championships here in Charlotte. Trying to get football here in Charlotte. We've worked hard for the past 2 years, and the city of Charlotte and the Panthers is working hard. I want it to come to Charlotte. I think every time we get champions, when we have to go, we got to go to the East. And I'm willing to share. I ain't trying to take all of it, but we're trying to attract state championships here in Charlotte. So I'm excited for future opportunities to make that happen. And so we got soccer here right now, and so we're super excited about that. But I'm working on that football.
I like
gotta
it.
Compete.
That's good. You have the last word, Erica Turner, Josh Springer, Q Tucker. I want to thank all three of you for being here. Q, the Hall of Famer, Josh Springer with his 10 titles, Erica Turner, the first Black female athletic director of CMS and a college basketball player as well. All distinguished guests, thanks so much for being with us. For Mike Collins, I'm Eric Spanberg. Thanks for listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.